Take notice of the above statement. At some level, the souls of all people are connected, though the precise manner and degree of this connection is not spelled out. And when the cosmology of mind is understood, it is seen that what Emerson was missing was an understanding of the matrix of the soul. See man as an embryonic soul image, wherein all the soul-generated personalites across the dimension of what we call time remain connected within what can be portrayed as an intellectual mind matrix of the soul and holographically. This same matrix of the soul also exists on a higher level within the matrix of the logos, see logos. Other quotes by Emerson on the soul of man is seen in the words, "The soul comes from without into the human body, as into a temporary abode, and it goes out of it and new it passes into other habitations. For the soul is immortal." And again, "It is the secret of the world that all things subsist and do not die, but only retire a little from sight and afterwards return again. Nothing is dead. Men feign themselves dead and endure mock funerals, and there they stand looking out of the window, sound and well." In some strange new disguise, Ralph Waldo Emerson in the Gospel of Thomas Sang 84, see man as an embryonic soul image. Man is portrayed as a projected image of the soul, and in the same way that all the previous images of the soul self that lived in all the lifetimes that the soul has lived are all dwelling within the soul mind matrix. All the souls who are portrayed as the soul self, which is the true being that each of us is, all dwell within the matrix of the logos, mind of God, holographically. In the same way that the soul is the sum total of all the lifetimes that it has lived, the logos, mind of God, is the sum total of all the experiences of all the souls that came into existence since the beginning of creation, and thus, all of creation is evolving and moving from the alpha of ignorance to the omega of enlightened light. Building upon the foundation that we are all expressions of the divine mind, and at a deeper level of consciousness, we are all connected. The higher reality of our life in this world is that each of us is evolving through the interactions with the souls of others, begins to unfold. And when it is understood that all our words and actions initiate their opposite polarity, that IFNOT balanced AND whole within us is released into the outer world and eventually comes back upon us. Only when we begin to perceptively understand the deeper connection of all souls, and we begin to grasp the higher realities of the life that we are presently living, can the spiritual/esoteric meaning of the Sermon on the Mount, CSEE also. In the same way that modern science has confirmed the existence of spirit, which it portrays as an unseen source field, see the true facts and realities of life, and has therefore confirmed the validity of the analogy of Plato's cave, which portrays mankind as only being able to perceive shadow images generated by the unseen source field, see Plato, the physicist. And perhaps even more important is the reality that science has now proven the connection of mind and spirit between physical bodies/objects. In Gary Zukav's book, the title of which is taken from the Chinese expression for physics, Wu Li, which he translates as patterns of organic energy, and writes, "Bell's theorem not only suggests that the world is quite different than it seems, it demands it. Something very exciting is happening. Physicists have proved rationally that our rational ideas about the world in which we live are profoundly deficient. What therefore is Bell's theorem? Bell's theorem, which was proposed in 1964 by J.S. Bell, a physicist working in Switzerland, was first confirmed experimentally in 1972. Physicist Henry Stapp, in a 1975 federal report, called it the most profound discovery of science. Bell's theorem succeeds in exhibiting the bizarre nature of the subatomic world. Experiments show that if paired particles, which are identical twins in their polarity, fly apart, and the polarity of one is changed by an experimenter, the polarity of the other particle changes instantaneously. Thus, even though from a physical perspective the two particles appear to us as unconnected and separate, it has been proven that the particles remain mysteriously connected regardless of the fact that there is no physical connection." Why is the reality of Bell's theorem portrayed as the most profound discovery of science? The crux of the problem that has limited man's thinking to that of the intellectual dark ages is found in the statement that the mind of man sees only what he is prepared to comprehend. And this organic, human limitation imposed upon our perceptive vision inhibits our ability to understand the physical forms and physical reality of what we do see with our physical eyes and senses. In the above link entitled The True Facts and Realities of Life, I demonstrate that our organic human vision does not permit us to perceive the source of the images we see that is generated from an unseen source field. While Bell's theorem has proven the connectedness of the physical objects we do see, Our undeveloped and immature physical eyes and senses cannot detect or comprehend the reason and purpose of these etheric connections. And the fact that Bell's theorem not only proves that the physical images that we see and interact with our physical senses are connected, but also that the physical objects are affected by the mind of mankind in ways that the vast majority of people are not prepared in any way to understand, unless they consciously develop the ability to perceptively gaze into what modern science has portrayed as the unseen source field. And most importantly, with respect to the findings of Bell's theorem, that what we see is affected by our own thinking. And this fact is demonstrated in the text of Itzhak Bentov's book, which reveals that the quantum theory asserts that there is no way one can measure some sets of things, like momentum and position, together very accurately, because the consciousness of the experimenter interacts with the experiment itself. Therefore, it becomes possible that the attitude of the experimenter must also influence the outcome of any particular experiment. Preface to Stalking the Wild Pendulum by Itzhak Bentov. Quoting the Wikipedia article on Bell's theorem, the title of Bell's seminal article refers to the 1935 paper by Einstein, Podolsky, and Rosen that challenged the completeness of quantum mechanics. After the EPR paper, quantum mechanics was in an unsatisfactory position. Either it was incomplete, in the sense that it failed to account for some elements of physical reality. In the same way, Einstein experienced shock when he first came into contact with the new emerging reality of atomic physics, and wrote in his autobiography, "All my attempts to adapt the theoretical foundation of physics to this new type of knowledge failed completely. It was as if the ground had been pulled out from under one, with no firm foundation to be seen anywhere, upon which one could have built." In much the same fashion, the European physicist Niels Bohr stated that the great extension of our experience in recent years has brought to light the insufficiency of our simple mechanical conceptions and, as a consequence, has shaken the foundation on which the customary interpretation of observation was based. What this means is exactly as stated by Einstein when he stated, "We may therefore regard matter as being constituted by the regions of space in which the field is extremely intense. There is no place in this new kind of physics both for the field and matter, for the field is the only reality." Quoted in M. Capick, The Philosophical Impact of Contemporary Physics. What is being stated is that the primary focus of science, where only what was seen with one's physical eyes, has now been rendered inadequate and incomplete, it being focused totally on observable matter, because the emerging body of facts and evidence now demonstrates that what we perceive physically is a projection from an unseen source where true reality exists. Which provokes the question, what is being projected? Thus, the statement by astronomer James Jeans, "Today there is a wide measure of agreement that the stream of knowledge is heading towards a non-mechanical reality. The universe begins to look more like a great thought than like a great machine." And the statement by astronomer Arthur Eddington, "The stuff of the universe is mind stuff," both demonstrate the reality that there is nothing but projected thought, which means that you're a thought that is being projected in this world by your true self that dwells in the reality of an unseen causal field. At Bell's theorem, thoughts and prayer can impact debts and karma, never not take responsibility in all negative interactions. If you don't understand the workings of the laws and why you should exercise non-judgment and unconditional love, oh, and a deeper level, the loss of bioenergy can be felt. Anger multiplies the loss. The epistle of Peter and James that if this paradoxical enigmatic knowledge is not understood, that it will remain even for those who really seek the truth, always to wander in error. Created in the image, same laws working in the world are working within our own mind. Do what you should be doing, wholeness. Don't need a teacher. All knowledge of self will come to you. Homilies, holographically. The pattern of the whole is replicated into each of the parts that make it up. So if we pose the question, what is the intellectual level of a sperm or ovum? If man and woman are holographically representative of cosmic sperm and ovum, then the intellectual limitations placed upon mankind are natural and organic. If what Paul and the other gospel authors stated is true, and there exist higher realities and dimensions of being that are totally inconceivable to the mind of the undeveloped faith-based believer, see Mysteries of the Gospel. And by virtue of the immaturity of the faith-based believers brought about by an embryonic condition of mind, which Paul portrayed as the natural mind of man, and the limitations of this embryonic condition of mind even inhibited Jesus from conveying the true meaning of the scriptures, and the higher reality of the soul, and the kingdom to all but his inner core of disciples, see in the house taught in parables, which means that the biblical authors were therefore powerless to explain in detail many of the most important gospel teachings and concepts in the literal text of the New Testament than the spiritually mature authors of the scriptures who were themselves enlightened to these higher realities, remained virtually powerless to do anything more than to provide the people with a list of do's and don'ts so that the faith-based believers will be in a position where they will be better able to evolve to a mature understanding and comprehension of the teachings of Jesus and the way. To totally ignore these do's and don'ts without knowing the consequence of one's choices and actions is paramount to walking out onto a freeway blindfolded, all growth and development derailed. Bell's theorem proves and demonstrates that physical bodies slash objects and people are connected on a deeper level, which in the above is portrayed as the etheric field of mind and spirit. When it is understood that while we cannot perceive it with our immature and undeveloped physical eyes that are blind to the reality that we are all connected on a deeper level of mind and spirit, and all our actions initiate a corresponding reaction from their opposite polarity, and all initiated actions are marked with our soul's spiritual DNA. If an action and reaction cannot be balanced within our own mind through the gateways, narrow straight gate of the tree of life, the externalized reaction must be perpetually returned back to us until it is able to be balanced within us. When the Church Father Origen stated that every soul comes into this world strengthened by the victories or weakened by the defeats of its previous life, Origen, De Principis, it must be understood that these strengths and weaknesses are the direct expression of the victories and slash or defeats that enable each of us to bring about wholeness in our generated words and actions. Each time we initiate an action and are unable to balance our action with its corresponding reaction opposite polarity generation, we not only suffer loss portrayed as the loss of our inheritance in the parable of the prodigal son, but we become anchored to the thinking and carnal realities of this world. Many of the mainstream Reform and conservative Jews were angered when Rabbi Ovadia Yosef, the former chief rabbi of Israel, a religious scholar who was also the spiritual leader of the Shas party, made the statement that no innocent Jews died in the Holocaust. What Rabbi Yosef said was that the 6 million Holocaust victims were reincarnations of the souls of sinners, people who transgressed and did all sorts of things that should not be done. Rabbi Yosef explained that these souls who had previously lived lives of sin had been reincarnated in order to atone immediately all sectors of the population, from then Prime Minister Barak to the Holocaust survivors, condemned the rabbi's remarks. In a communique issued from his office, Barak stated, "His words are liable to harm the memory of those who perished in the Holocaust and are liable to hurt the feelings of their families and the feelings of the entire nation." Legislator Yosef Tommy Lapid, who had been himself a Holocaust survivor who at that time headed the secularist Shinui Party, condemned Rabbi Yosef's statements and said he was in effect confirming what Hitler said, that the Jews are sinners. Holocaust organizations and the two main Israeli radio stations reported that they were inundated with phone calls and fax messages, most of them criticizing Yosef's statement. The Yad Vashem Holocaust Memorial Museum labeled Yosef's remarks miserable and said they seriously harmed the memory of the victims. In a release statement, the museum said, "With all due respect to such a leader, it's hard to understand where Rabbi Yosef gets the courage to explain the intentions and ways of the supreme authority, attempting to clarify his words in the following week to a populace that did not comprehend one of the most paramount teachings of both the Old and New Testaments of the Bible." Rabbi Yosef cited a 16th century Jewish mystic, Isaac Luria, who wrote, "If the soul was not purifying entirely the first time, and it left this world, that soul must come back in a reincarnation, even a few times, until it is entirely purifying." What Rabbi Yosef stated was that all those Jews who died at the hands of Hitler were merely reaping their own debts they had themselves committed in a previous life. See the laws that control our lives. And while the secular Jewish leaders were offended by his statement, Rabbi Yosef did not state that they were Jews when they committed the sins that invoked the laws of cause and effect upon them. From the perspective of the laws that pseudo-authorities are in denial of, the scriptures state, "Do not be deceived. God cannot be mocked. A man reaps what he sows." Gal 6, 7 NIV. And this could just as well be expressed in the words, "The chickens of those people who suffered under Hitler had come home to roost, and in that life they inherited the fruit of their own past actions." What Rabbi Ovadia Yosef had attempted to explain was that in their souls' previous lives, those who perished in the Holocaust were reincarnations of the souls of sinners, people who transgressed and did all sorts of things that should not be done, which the mystic Isaac Loria had explained when he wrote, "If the soul was not purifying entirely the first time, and it left this world, that soul must come back in a reincarnation, even a few times, until it is entirely purifying." But this could also have been explained in the gospel teachings when Jesus stated at Matthew 5:23-26, "But I say, if you are even angry with someone, you are subject to judgment. If you call someone an idiot, you are in danger of being brought before the court. And if you curse someone, you are in danger of the fires of hell." So if you are presenting a sacrifice at the altar in the temple, and you suddenly remember that someone has something against you, leave your sacrifice there at the altar. Go and be reconciled to that person. Then come and offer your sacrifice to God. And then, with the foundational teachings on the pre-existent soul removed from the gospel, it has become impossible to understand the warning which follows the foregoing. When you are on the way to court with your adversary, settle your differences quickly. Otherwise, your accuser may hand you over to the judge, who will hand you over to an officer, and you will be thrown into prison. And if that happens, you surely won't be free again until you have paid the last penny. And what this means is that until you have rectified all debts against the soul of your brother or sister to whom you have incurred a debt, that the two of you will continue to be brought back together in similar circumstances until the debts have been resolved and forgiven, and you will remain in this self-imposed prison, unable to advance into a more spiritually mature condition which would enable you to begin to receive the divine manna or sacred knowledge, until which time the debts that were incurred have been released from your soul. Blindness. Jesus taught that there were three causes of blindness: see soul evolution, reincarnation, and soul development. That is, the debts, sins, incurred against others in a previous life the soul lived. The sin of one's parents who did not properly prepare their children to properly develop the higher areas of mind and spirit. The natural immaturity of organic human consciousness imposed upon every person as they begin to achieve the necessary stages of higher development of mind and spirit. Now as Jesus passed by, he saw a man who was blind from birth, and his disciples asked him, saying, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" John 9:1-2. Jesus portrayed the Pharisees as blind guides because their thinking, mindset, religious framework of thinking, and their lifestyle inhibited their higher development. Organic blindness is the normal undeveloped mental condition of mind. And what this means is that because of undeveloped immaturity, all of mankind are born blind to their own higher soul and spiritual reality. But as the mind of man matures and evolves to a condition of wholeness, that is, they that are whole have no need of the physician, but they that are sick. "I came not to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance." Mark 2:17. The fullness of perceptive vision and enlightened understanding will come unless the process of developmental maturity of mind and consciousness is derailed by mental obstacles and slash or a carnal lifestyle immersed in the ways and thinking of this world. When the mind is properly intellectually nourished and permitted to mature with all developmental obstacles cast aside and overcome, the inherent human blindness begins to pass as greater wholeness is achieved. What is attained through this developmental maturity is the personification of the true meaning of Paul's words when he wrote, "For we know in part, and we prophesy in part, but when the perfect comes, the partial passes away. When I was a child, I talked like a child, I thought like a child, I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I set aside childish ways. Now we see but a dim reflection as in a mirror, then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known." 1 Cor 13:9-12. Organic man that Paul portrays as being of a natural mind, see animal soul, can neither see or understand man's own higher soul and spiritual reality as stated in the words, "And I, brethren, could not speak to you as to spiritual people, but as to carnal, as to babes in Christ. I fed you with milk and not with solid food, for until now you were not able to receive it, and even now you are still not able, for you are still carnal." 1 Cor 3:1-3 NKJ. Paul's reference to "when the perfect comes" makes reference to our own maturity and wholeness, that is, "Howbeit we speak wisdom among them that are perfect, yet not the wisdom of this world, nor of the princes of this world, that come to naught." 1 Cor 2:6. And this condition of wholeness and perfection was set forth in the words of Jesus. You therefore must be perfect, as your heavenly Father is perfect. Matt 5:48. In the Epistle to the Corinthians, Paul commands to take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. 2 Cor 10:5. But how can such a reality be achieved? The answer is to bring about wholeness in every action, which permits one's thoughts and actions to be drawn into and through the narrow straight gate of the tree of life. To affirm this requirement as genuine, the gospel account of Jesus warns, "But I say unto you, that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment." Matt 12:36 KJV. Idle words can be defined as those thoughts or impressions which are not, and cannot be made whole. Which is why Paul tells us to pray without ceasing. 1 Thess 5:17 KJV. When it is understood that every action is subject to judgment, your accuser may hand you over to the judge, which is determined by our ability to bring about wholeness to our actions. See, every day is judgment day. And that our actions that can't be brought into wholeness anchor us to this world as the far country in the parable of the prodigal son, which must be redeemed. And you will be thrown into prison. And if that happens, you surely won't be free again until you have paid the last penny. And because ultra-important teachings were removed and suppressed in the original Gospels, modern believers cannot understand the above and slash or the process that brings it about in our lives. The law is that as you do unto others, the same will be returned to you. And while this return may not be in the present life, it will come back upon the soul until the last debt is repaid and neutralized, that is, till thou hast paid the uttermost farthing. See, getting out of the prison. And of even greater importance is the fact that so long as debts are owed to one's brothers and sisters, it remains impossible to fulfill the laws and manifest the final temple within oneself. The church father Origen, who was known as the Prince of Christian Learning in the 3rd century, second only to the apostles, writes that, to everyone according to his merits, nor will the happiness or unhappiness of each one's birth, or whatever be the condition that falls to his lot, be deemed accidental. See predestination. Why? Why are the conditions of one's birth not deemed an accident? Because there are no accidents, as the atheist and secular humanist mindset promotes. Origen then goes on and writes with respect to each person's station in life, that the cause of each one's actions is a pre-existing one. And then everyone, according to his deserts, is made by God either a vessel unto honor or dishonor. Therefore, every individual vessel, person, has furnished to its creator out of itself the causes and occasions of its being formed by him to be either a vessel unto honor or one unto dishonor. As stated in the foregoing, each person's birth into this life is determined by that person's own past actions, that is, either a vessel unto honor or one unto dishonor. Or, as stated by the Apostle Paul, do not be deceived. God cannot be mocked. A man reaps what he sows. Gal 6:7 NIV. If the person's thoughts, words and slash or actions cannot be brought to wholeness within the mind and body of the person, and as explained and explored above, the opposite polarity, or reaction, is externalized and imbued with the imprint of that soul's spiritual DNA, then often that soul must be born in accord with the physical embodiment that will permit the soul to retrieve the lost externalized aspect of in a future life. If a man abuses and slash or rapes a woman, that imprint of self carrying his soul's spiritual DNA cannot be restored back to him as a man, so he will have to be born as a woman in order to restore the loss of his essence when he abused and slash or raped a woman, or women. And his abusive actions towards a woman remains embedded in that man and woman's etheric bodies. Till thou hast paid the uttermost farthing, see the reality of mind. When Jesus taught in the Sermon on the Mount to turn the other cheek, and to forgive all who abuse and persecute you, these statements were presented as a matter of the natural laws of consciousness. When you are attacked by another person, you turn the other cheek and slash or forgive the abuser so as not to become a part of his karmic imprint, which must be repaid and balanced in the future. When you forgive, you shield yourself from being imprinted in your own etheric field by the aggressor's externalized imprint of his spiritual DNA, which protects you from being a part of the other person's necessary process of retrieving their externalized imprinted aspect of self that was lost in that person's inability to balance their reactive actions. This cycle of action and reaction has been portrayed as the karmic wheel. One account was provided by a woman in one of our spiritual forums where she explained, "I was born understanding karma, and how to jump off the karmic wheel when the understanding and compassion of how to comes into your life, or your mind. What he did to me with the knife and the continuous assault for 3 months or more was a debt he owed me. When I went INTUIT, employed her intuition, and found out what I had incurred upon him before, when we were together in another lifetime, my heart and my mind totally understood this. Totally. When I had this flash of insight, and my body also remembered, I called him on the phone to let him know that I understood. I asked him if he had a few minutes to speak to me. Reluctantly, he said, "Why, yes." I then proceeded to tell him that I forgave him for all he did to TOME, and that I understood why he did it. He was speechless for about 30 seconds, and then said to me, "Janet, I don't know what to say. How can you forgive me?" I said, "Well, can I know why you did what you did? And I am calling you now to let you know I forgive you totally and completely." I then proceeded to explain to him that I am jumping off this wheel with him now, because I have come to that place on my path, that I understand the whys and hows of why he did it. I told him I love you unconditionally and will always love you unconditionally. He said, "What?" I said, "Unconditional love is the first and most important lesson any soul can learn." I said, "Thank you for bringing me that lesson and doing your job really well. From this lesson you gave me, I have learned much. I am now telling you I am off this wheel with you. One of us had to learn. I did. I send you love, compassion, and peace. May you find peace and happiness in your life. And now I am gone from it. I love you. Take care." End of conversation. See the laws. The gift on the altar, which renders such a person totally incapable of true spiritual development and advancement, and incapable of understanding the higher reality of the soul, which means that such a person is doomed to failure as a generated soul image, until the debts under the laws are first satisfied and overcome. Ad Addit copied the Church Father Origen stated that every soul comes into this world strengthened by the victories or weakened by the defeats of its previous life, Origen, De Principis. And these strengths and weaknesses are the direct expression of the victories and slash or defeats dynamically manifest within the matrix of the soul mind that each person in the present life draws upon, where man envisions memory as being stored and ingrained in a computer-like storage disk that can be looked up. Such a scenario is simply not the case. All the past images that the soul has lived as continues to exist within the matrix of the soul mind, and as portrayed by Saint Teresa, it can be said that each has its own room or space within the countless segments of the castle of the soul. And since time is a dimension of mind, see the enigma of time and the soul of man. Each of these past image personalities exist as points of consciousness within the soul mind matrix. Within the matrix of the soul that lived as Hitler, the personality of Hitler still dwells as a point of consciousness that continues his former existence. And in like manner, Rabbi Ovadia Yosefan expressed the mystical teachings of the Jewish sage Isaac Luria when he stated that the 6 million Holocaust victims were reincarnations of the souls of sinners, people who transgressed and did all sorts of things that should not be done. See the chickens come home to roost. Which means that within the matrix of mind of the soul who lived as Hitler, exists a previous image personality who were victimized by the people who lived as Jews under Nazi Germany. In the same foregoing link, I present the example of Barack Obama's spiritual advisor, the Reverend Jeremiah Wright, who subscribes to what is called Black Liberation Theology. And within the matrix of the soul mind of the Reverend Wright exists an image personality that previously lived as a white slave owner. Which means that the Reverend Wright's hatred of white people is the result of his abominations towards the black race by a previous soul image that continues to dwell within the matrix of the Reverend Wright's soul. Mankind. Who Jesus portrays as dwelling in the outer darkness of mind and being, or what Plato portrays as a cave of illusions, dwells within a holographic reality that exists within a larger holograph that he cannot gain access to without the proper development of mind. And while the laws of creation orchestrate the events based upon man's own past experiences in the present, see the laws of creation, and it is these laws and forces which the deists portrayed as being endowed with self-sustaining and self-acting powers, acting as second causes, which orchestrate and even script the lives of man in the present that cause him to confront his own self, that is. Do not be deceived. God cannot be mocked. A man reaps what he sows. Gal 6, 7 NIV. It is the development of man's intuitive spheres of mind that provides him direct access into the previous soul images within the matrix of the soul mind that has orchestrated the events that man is experiencing in the present. See spiritual intuitive development. If Hitler had been able to directly draw upon his previous experiences as a victim of the aggression of those people who in his life were born as Jews who Rabbi Yosefan portrayed as having previously lived as sinners, people who transgressed and did all sorts of things that should not be done, then he might have been able to draw upon the insight to break the perpetual loop of the laws. See Groundhog Day in What's Wrong with Wearing a Seatbelt? And he would have been able to overcome the laws which the deists portrayed as being endowed with self-sustaining and self-acting powers, and free himself from the shackles of what Jesus portrayed as the prison or the conditions of birth.